Get ready to immerse yourself in the Athens, Georgia music scene with music lover and local Athens resident, Marlene Sokol Stewart. Marlene takes you on an adventure as she gives you an outsider's perspective on the past and present of Georgia's music mecca and how influential it still is today.
Hello, everyone. This is Athcast Music, the music of Athens, Georgia, now and then. And I'm Marlene Sokol Stewart, your host. Well, things are going pretty well. Season 3's ending up pretty nicely. And I gotta say, it's been a blast for this third season. I have had so many good conversations, and I just have enjoyed everything about this podcast. Getting better at some things, maybe not getting better at others, I don't know. I just think that we have a good time talking on this podcast, and I hope people will start listening a little more, because remember, if you don't listen, you can't hear. Well, today is my guest, Dusty Gannon. And I gotta say, I had to chase Dusty down a bit, and we had to go through tours and back and forth, and when he could, when he couldn't, when I could, when I couldn't, those kind of things. But it finally happened, and I just had such a great time talking to him. He's a pretty fascinating guy, I have to tell you. And he really exemplifies his intelligence, his thoughts about goth, about living in Athens, and just what it means to have PTSD and how you deal with it. And it was just a really great conversation. Dusty Gannon is the lead vocalist and guitarist of Vision Video. He basically originates from Athens, Georgia. He was an Army brat, so he kind of traveled around and around, but they landed here and he pretty much grew up around Athens. He's a former U.S. combat veteran who served in Afghanistan, and Gannon also worked as a firefighter before embarking on his music career. His life experiences with trauma and darker sides of humanity deeply shape his songwriting, addressing themes like mental health, war, and mortality. Gannon founded Vision Video in the late 2010s, releasing their debut album, LinkedIn Red, in 2021. The band draws inspiration from classic goth and post-punk acts such as The Cure and The Chameleons, blending these influences with a modern flair. As a matter of fact, he is on tour with The Chameleons right now, and as this podcast publishes, actually. So that is a very cool thing for him. Their sophomore album, Haunted Hours, was released in 2022. Beyond music, Gannon has built a strong social media following, thanks to his engaging goth dad persona on platforms like TikTok and Instagram. But Gannon still remains committed to tackling issues like PTSD and trauma, using music as a therapeutic outlet. Take a listen to my fascinating conversation with Dusty Gannon of Vision Video. I promise you, you will not be disappointed. Well, welcome to Athcast Music, Dustin. I have been so happy all week knowing that you were going to come on this show. I remember the first time I met you, I can't remember, it must have been Elf Power or somebody
like that. So.
There was a big crowd. And Freeman Leverett, who I know and has been on this podcast as well, goes, he points at you and he goes, "You need to get him on." And I said, "Well, who is he? You know, I don't know anybody."
Right. That's all good.
I mean,
I feel like I don't either, so I
well,
get it.
my perspective is an outsider's view coming into this town as if, you know, I was a stranger.
Yeah.
I'm not completely a stranger, but, and people are starting to get to know me, and this podcast has certainly helped me do that.
Right.
But I slipped you a little piece of paper with my number and stuff. I laughed the next day because I said, that's never going to make it to any place than the trash or out of his pocket or something. And I finally saw you at In Harmony.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to you again then. And was your wife was sitting there?
Partner, but
partner,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Partner. My granddaughter said, "Is he married? Is he married? And what's her name?" You know, I'm like, "Well, I think he's married. I don't know."
Yeah.
But anyway, so she was with you, and we talked for a while, And that's when I said, okay, I got your information.
Right.
Never got you on season two. I don't know how, but it filled up so fast.
Yeah.
It was a crazy, crazy time. I really do have a very good time on this. And maybe sometimes I'm the only one having a good time, but I hope not.
Oh, I'm sure that's not the case. I'm already having a good time. So,
see, there you go. Okay. So, what do you think about podcasts? You just told me you did two podcasts yesterday.
Yeah. I do a lot of them. And I kind of have a policy where essentially, like, you know, if anybody asks, assuming it's not like something problematic or against my morals and ethics or something like that, I pretty much do them like anytime because I just enjoy it. And I think that there are really interesting conversations usually that come out of them much of the time. And I like getting to know people. I like talking a lot, which you'll probably find out soon, but
well, I like talking too.
Yeah, there you go. So we're birds of a feather right now, but I just think that they're interesting formats of kind of nonlinear storytelling sometimes, or you know, you can really get at the core of something cool. And when I was, you know, a firefighter, I was driving to Atlanta all the time. So basically, you know, I was having this like 50-minute commute, and I listened to tons of podcasts at that time.
That was my question. Do you even listen to them?
Yeah, I listen to a lot.
Yeah, of them.
And it's just, I think it's like a valuable way to learn something in, you know, a less terse, like less academic sort of way, but it's still just as meaningful in a lot of sensibilities.
I mean, some of them get pretty wild and crazy, mm-hmm. and some of them get pretty serious.
Yeah.
But it's kind of interesting that this popped up and exploded. I mm-hmm. kind of give credit to Marc Maron mm-hmm. for being the one who did that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I'm correct on that, but I know he had a lot to do
right.
with making podcasts. Soon as Obama was on, too, that
right.
was it.
I mean, it just, yeah, went through the roof.
It went through right. the roof. And I'm a Marc Maron fan for the mm-hmm. most part. There are some things that I wish he wouldn't do.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, Mark, please shut up. You know, just don't do that again. I did meet him and get a picture with him, but I was trying to give him my sister's book, so.
Right.
But I drove to Asheville to see him, and mm-hmm. it was really good. It was really a fun night. So I love what you're doing. I had not seen you. Mm-hmm. live before.
Oh, cool.
And I dragged my husband this. I said, oh, I mean, he's on the podcast. I really need to see him live.
So yeah.
And he liked it. It's not his thing. He's right, much right. more of a 60s, 70s. I mean, you know, he knows a lot of music.
Yeah.
He doesn't follow pop stuff at mm-hmm. all. Very eclectic stuff.
Right.
So I was right there watching you, got some good pictures. Mm-hmm. And I thought you guys were so much fun.
Thank you.
I mean, I remember during those days of the record stores, what we sold, I got to fess up. I don't really know much about what goth really is.
Yeah.
But I did know the punk rock scene of the late 70s, 80s.
Right.
You know, from that era.
Yeah.
Sex Pistols, David Bowie,
yeah.
Ramones. We even had it in store with the Ramones.
Oh, cool.
I have a signed Yoo-Hoo bottle.
Yeah.
With all their names on it.
Oh, that's so cool.
It's really cool.
That's
and
really
it's
rad.
it's got the chocolate drink in it.
Nice. It's still intact.
It's still intact.
That's probably worth something.
It probably
you know?
Is. I probably, you know, could you know, pay for my next vacation with
right,
that.
Maybe. Right. We sold the Yoo-Hoo and now we're set.
Yeah, I mean, and then Patti Smith. Jesus.
Yeah. Oh,
when
man.
She came on the scene.
She's amazing.
Holy moly.
Absolutely incredible.
Stooges, mm-hmm. Bad Brain. I mean, I could go on.
Yeah.
You know, there is so much going on. So I just am wondering, how did you, as Vision Video, mm-hmm. draws a lot from that.
Right.
How did that come into, you know, because I found myself dancing to your music
yeah.
this weekend, much like I did then.
Right, right.
And here's that now and then thing coming into my podcast, because that's what it is, Outcast
right.
music now and then.
Right,
so,
right.
I mean, what was your vision?
You know, when we started out, I was just sort of writing little pieces of music because I had just left the military and I had just come back to Athens. And, you know, I had a kind of a long sort of intermittent history with playing guitar and keyboards and stuff like that, but never in any like serious bands or in any like major functional sort of way. It was just sort of like a pet hobby kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I've always been incredibly engrossed by music. So I grew up in a very rural area just outside of here in Athens, about 35 minutes outside of town. And it's a small town called Maxey's, Georgia.
I know Maxey's.
Yeah. I'm shocked, actually.
I do know Maxey's, Georgia, because I've been in Maxey's, Georgia, because I provide health insurance for people. And, well, I did.
Yeah.
I'm still providing Medicare at this point in time, which has been interesting. I was supposed to retire, but blah, blah, blah. But yes, I know Maxey's, so that's crazy.
So
Oglethorpe?
Yeah, Oglethorpe County. Okay. So for those of you that don't know, Oglethorpe County is like one of the most rural agrarian counties in the Southeast. It is very, very, very agrarian-based, and the population is very low. Property tax is very low, so like the schools, the infrastructure is sort of like very dilapidated. It feels like you're living like 20 years in the past in a lot of the places.
You didn't have like slate boards that you
were not quite that bad. But like when I was in high school, we had books from like, you know, the late 80s and early 90s. And I was like, surely science has progressed to some measure more, that being in the early 2000s. But when I grew up though, I really commonly and consistently felt very isolated because like I was born in Germany to a German mother. My dad was in the army and we moved from Germany to like Virginia for a very short period of time. And then California for several years where I lived like right outside of Monterey and it was super nice. Like we lived on the beach and I was kind of a beach bum kid, you know, and I liked the town and I loved all of that stuff, even at a very young age. And then we moved to Georgia and, you know, and we lived in Oconee County, which is like really, you know, extremely like affluent, like very homogenous, very like Christian, you know, and I didn't like that at all. Like we didn't fit in because my sister and I were very weird. And then we ended up moving to Oglethorpe and it was even worse in a way because it was so isolating. But because of that level of isolation, I also like really had time and the space to kind of figure out what I liked and what I loved and what I was into, because, you know, that was early internet. The internet wasn't that great. You couldn't just look up stuff about, like, say, for example, goth music. Like that was a very, like, you would find message boards and it was all sort of like through you know, communication. It wasn't like, here's a Wikipedia article with like, you know, tons of info or something like that, or like tons of websites. It was very rudimentary and you'd go on these message boards and people would be like, oh, go listen to these bands or whatever. So it was still kind of word of mouth, but you know, it was still close enough to Athens. So I would spend almost every single weekend here and I would go to like record stores, like Low Yo-Yo Stuff, the now, defunct School Kids Records that was on Clayton, which was a big love of mine.
Yes.
And of course, the Wuxtry, which is a, you know, in the beating heart of Athens. But all three of those places were like really integral. And I would go, you know, my parents would drop me off with allowance, or when I got a job eventually at a movie theater in Athens, I, you know, had that money. And I would spend, it's funny looking back, I didn't save any money from that time when I should have been probably putting at least like 10% away. I spent everything on records.
A lot of people did.
Yeah.
It was, you waited for your, at least in my town,
absolutely,
you waited for your allowance to hit those singles.
Right. Yeah.
Or whatever albums, whatever era you're in.
Exactly.
I personally was singles.
Yeah.
But you had to spend that money. It was burning a hole in your pocket.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean,
but what were you buying then?
At that point, so, you know, I was really interested because back then in the early 2000s, you know, like, so around about like 2005 and 2006, there was this sort of like post-punk revival and sort of goth revival. A lot of people call it sort of the third wave of goth and post-punk. With bands like, you know, Interpol and She Wants Revenge and The Editors and all these like kind of dark, brooding bands that, kind of combined post-punk and goth rock. So it was like a little catchier, but very dark and brooding still. But before that, it was still very like incredibly underground. And there was like a small second wave in the 90s. But there, you know, that stuff really never resonated with me. The stuff in the 80s, in the late 70s and early 80s was like what really captured me, because it felt like, I remember coming to those record stores and I would have like lists of stuff to look for from those like message boards and stuff like that. And I would just go up to those guys at the counter, you know, and be like, hey, do you guys have any of this? And I'm like, you know, 14, 15 year old or whatever. And I would hand them these lists and they'd be like, oh, you know, I think.
What drew you to that?
I mean,
you said your sister and you were weird.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So
definitely.
Why were you weird? What do you mean?
Well, I think some of it is due to the fact that we were like military brats. And when you're a kid growing up in a military system, like, you know, every 3 years or less, you move. You are constantly around very different people. It is not one, you know, homogenous group. It is a very diverse group of people. And, you know, that's how the military always has been, probably always will be. And so, you know, and also just like being from Europe, having a European mother, you know, my dad was like a hippie in the 60s and 70s. Like, it was very, I think it was a number of different factors that coalesced that made us kind of strange. But you know, like,
hence your look or tagline or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Stay strange.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know that I'm succinctly aware of any one thing that kind of was the nail in the coffin, so to speak.
Well, but, you know, so like I said, I don't really know that much about the psychology, mm-hmm. the culture.
Right.
The reasoning behind certain dressing and attire.
Yeah.
Like, where does that all come from? Why is it important to rip stockings and t-shirts and makeup? Your makeup is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Do you do that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I
yourself?
Do it all myself. Yeah. I taught it all myself.
What the hell?
Yeah. Just practice.
It's gorgeous.
Thank you. Yeah.
And you have different faces.
Right. Right.
Not all the same face.
Absolutely.
So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But I mean, in your soul and mm-hmm. psyche.
Yeah.
What is that movement? What is that culture for you?
So like goth in general is sort of first and foremost a music-based subculture, right? So that's the simple thing about it. And then within that answer is the complexity of it, which a lot of people, you know, they think of the obvious. They think of like Bauhaus or Susie and the Banshees. But to me, it's when you look at goth as a genre and also a subculture, but especially the genre of music, it is more of an umbrella term if you look at it from a historical perspective. Mm-hmm. Because basically, you know, I'm a huge music history nerd, so I read a lot of books about music history. But basically, in the late 70s and early 80s, you know, punk was sort of being appropriated by record companies, and they were just like prepackaging these like almost like boy bands, you know, in the mm-hmm. early 2000s. They're like, all right, we got these four edgy kids from North London. Let's, you know, give them a little bit of money and throw them into a studio, and it doesn't matter if they know how to play their instruments or not. And, you know, I mean, even the Sex Pistols were essentially a manufactured band by McLaren. But
I had a hard time with the Sex Pistols still.
Yeah. I mean, they've got some great undeniable songs, but also incredibly problematic people that did a lot of really terrible things.
Oh.
But, you know, so there was this sort of shift away from punk. And a lot of the people that were the more artistically inclined, I would argue, the little bit more avant-garde, a little bit more introspective people that were there for that really initial wave of punk, they started to kind of shirk away from it because they're seeing the industry side taking advantage of it. And so they said, you know, let's just like make whatever else we want. And for years, I mean, for essentially, you know, from the late 70s up until the mid 80s, that term goth wasn't even really in common lexicon. You know,
it was, no.
there were a myriad number of names for it. There were death rockers. There were Cure heads for the Cure fans.
Yes,
there were,
yes.
You know, there were all these different monikers that they were associated with. So there was never like this abiding sensibility of what goth was, but because by the time that people started calling it quote unquote goth, there were, you know, even the musicians that were in that first wave, like Susie Sue and Peter Murphy and all those guys, they had already started doing different kinds of stuff that wasn't exactly, it like kind of fit, but it wasn't exactly
trying
that spot on sound.
Expand.
Yes.
And maybe evolve.
Exactly.
The culture.
Exactly. So it all still works under this, you know, like I said, it's like an umbrella. And there's like now, you know, that we're in this sort of what I would say fourth wave of this subculture and this genre that's happening right now with a lot of bands that are coming out. It's so large of an umbrella that it's like, you know, it's almost like calling, you know, rock bands. What's like, well, okay, what kind of
rock?
You know
yeah.
what I mean? It's like, there's so many things that fit under this. And much to the chagrin of many of people that are involved in this sort of goth scene, there are so many people on the internet that just bicker constantly about this staunch definition. And that's why I tell people, like, don't really worry about it. You know, it's like, it's one of those things where you can, if you hear it and like my litmus test is like, go ask the DJ at a goth night to play a song from the band. And if they go, ugh, it may not work out in that genre, but, you know, cause a lot of people see things from bands like say, like Evanescence or,
yes.
you know, like metal bands and they have this sort of dark
right.
gothy aesthetic. But that aesthetic is owned by nobody, and it isn't a signifier of a band being like quote unquote goth or
well,
not,
in my
opinion.
And truly, I thought I was going to hear much more and see much more violence and
yeah.
really darkness.
Yeah,
but I didn't.
No, I think
your statements about voting and
yeah.
your statements about the man who we do not want to come into politics
yeah, yeah.
or be our president.
Right.
It was really important for you to say those things.
Absolutely.
And meanwhile, you're saying it with your hair spiked, your makeup on,
right.
your jeans and Emily
right.
is dressed, you know, in this leather
yeah.
and buckles and, you know, like I said, ripped stockings
yeah.
and boots. And so why is the attire important like that?
Yeah, I think it speaks to the core sentiment that is sort of the nucleus of a lot of that music. And I don't think it has to be that way, but I think it just generally ends up manifesting in such a manner. You know, for me, when you look at the body of all sort of goth music and subculture, whether it's fashion or the music or whatever, there was this very clear fascination and flirtation with the macabre and with darker things.
There has been through the history.
Yeah.
I mean, for
you know,
sure.
But that didn't start with goth, you know, like you look back at Vampyra or Vincent Price or
yeah.
know, Screamin' Jay Hawkins or something like that. Like there's so many.
Go all the way back to Caligula.
Yeah. I mean, there you go. Yeah. It's like there's so many things. You
that
know,
was, you
some
know.
Of the first recorded stories. In anthropology, you know, looking back, like an anthropological standpoint, some of the first oral stories were like ghost stories, you know,
yeah.
because, you know, those people back tens of thousands of years ago, death was everywhere. And the fear of death was probably just as real as it is today, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But they had to tell these stories to wrap their heads around something so esoteric as it was back then, I'm sure. So I think that it's a very human thing to be fascinated with the macabre. I mean, even when I was a kid, I remember, like, I'm a huge, to nobody's surprise ever, I'm a huge horror movie fan. And I found that fascination from a very, very young age. I mean, I think it started with, like, just kind of Halloween, you know, like
mm-hmm.
not the film, but the holiday, you know, just going out and being able to dress up and see all these kind of, you know, exciting creatures of the night roaming the neighborhood, you know, begging for
the
candy.
The ghosts and the ghouls
yeah,
and the
it's fun.
Witches and the, yeah.
And there's
I
something.
Loved Halloween. That, I still do.
Yeah. I think there's something cool, and sort of, ghostly or ephemeral about like going out at night as a kid, because you're not normally allowed to be out late at night or later into the evening when when it's dark. But now it's all of a sudden all these kids are out, and it's just like there's an excitement to that. So it probably started there for me, but you know, yeah, it went into horror films, and then.
Well, I loved to be scared as a kid.
Yeah.
I don't like horror films now, and I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't like to be scared.
Yeah, yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll watch a film. Do you know Montu Miller?
I don't.
He's a teacher at Cedar Creek, and he does that Wednesday night at Hendershot's.
Okay.
He does it open mic, and everybody does spoken word. And
yeah.
All this stuff. And
okay, cool.
He, all the time,
yeah,
is on Facebook saying, okay, give me a horror movie.
Yeah, yeah.
You get, or tell me some good movies.
Right.
I have time to watch a movie. And you get points if it's a horror movie.
Right, right.
And if you saw this guy and talked to this guy, you would never even imagine.
Right.
I have a girlfriend that was one of my clients when I was in the music business. Mm-hmm. And oh my gosh, she's just horror. I mean, Jaws is it for her.
Right.
I mean, it's like
a great one. It's classic.
You know, so yeah. But, you know, I was thinking back about you talking about moving in the military.
Yeah.
And you ended up in the military.
Mm-hmm.
So National Guard.
Yeah.
EMT.
Mm-hmm.
Firefighter.
Yeah.
How did that translate to your, I'm going to say, basically alter ego.
Yeah.
I think that when you are playing, you are in a certain personality.
Yeah.
But when you decided,
yeah,
this was your music to do, how did you translate all those things that you did into this? Did they stay out of the picture, or, you know, you talk about your PTSD.
Yeah.
So I wonder sometimes, is this, you know, like your, I always like to say primal scream.
Right.
But is that a way for you to forget about those triggers?
Yeah.
And about those times, because you were a medic. You were a first responder, correct?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
So you can't unsee things.
Oh, yeah. Very much so.
And as many, the military. I mean, it's a real, I have a son-in-law.
Right.
Who also, you know, experiences some of that.
Mm-hmm.
How have you been with coping with trying to go day to day without it being, I don't know what happens when that happens, this trigger happens to you. Do you go into a severe depression? Do you have anxiety? All of the above. I don't know what PTSD does. I know that I got hit by a car at night.
Mm-hmm.
I know walking across the street still to this day, I was 18.
Right. You still feel it. Yeah.
And if my husband walks across that street without me, I am pissed.
Right.
Because I know they can't see me.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's.
And so I still have that.
Right. Exactly.
So I can't even imagine how you on a daily basis, and you're still so social. You're part of the community. You do great things for people with PTSD. You're not going to let it take you over.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is what you said to me. I mean, like, when I see the things you're doing and all the things you're involved with, that's me saying, well, he just isn't going to let it take over his life.
Yeah.
And I think that's wonderful. So can you just kind of expound on some of how you do cope with that?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, you mentioned something earlier in the question, just sort of saying, like, how do you do this to forget? I actually do it to remember. I spent a long time trying to forget a lot of the things that I've seen. And one thing that you realize when you're diagnosed with PTSD and you're learning to deal with it healthily is that, like, you're never going to forget this stuff. It's never going to go away. And there's nothing that you can ever do to get those memories to stop. And the triggers to things will be so random. And so it'll be things that you don't even think. Like, I mean, there are things that are, like, obvious, like, you know, there are things that I know about that I'm like, oh, I've got to be, like, a little careful around that, just to be, like, aware of myself in certain environments or whatever. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of things, like, you know, or nothing at all that'll trigger memories or flashbacks. But for me, my PTSD started with just this period of time where I was just so, like, just absolutely blank. I didn't really feel that bad, but I didn't feel good about anything. And feeling that, I would rather feel horrible all the time than feel nothing.
Because feeling is more important.
Yeah,
because
it's like you're alive, you know, you can feel it and you can kind of go, you know, something's wrong or whatever. Or at least it's just something. But for me, it was just this, like, this period of a few months where I was just kind of moving through time. And I was just like, you know, and I could tell something was wrong because I was like, all the things that I enjoy doing, you know, I'm not enjoying very, very simple things. but, you know, as and that was during the time where I was working at the fire department. So I was firefighter and paramedic, you know, and one shift I'd be on the fire engine.
Oh my gosh, how did that not trigger?
I mean, yeah.
A paramedic?
Yeah, yeah. Being on an ambulance in Metro Atlanta is very, very tough stuff. I mean, way worse than the war. You know, the war was milquetoast compared to Atlanta. It's crazy. So, you know, there's a lot of superstition within the first responder world. And, you know, I don't know what it was about me, but I'm what we would refer to as a black cloud, which is very, I guess, apropos maybe, but okay. A black cloud is somebody that when they get on the ambulance, bad things are going to happen. It was just like, oh, Gannon's on the ambulance again. It's going to be a crazy shift.
Crazy night. Yeah.
So, you know, I was a very good paramedic. I was a good firefighter, but I was an even better paramedic. I have a brain for it, and I'm very, very, very good for whatever reason at just being really calm when things are going very wrong. I can just turn that fear, because the fear is still there. I mean, it's very much so there, and there's very much so a part of my brain that's like, panic, panic, panic. So I can turn that part of my brain off temporarily and go, okay, what do we do to get through this in the best possible outcome? And, you know, whether you're plugging a gunshot wound with a person screaming in the back of the ambulance, or you're doing CPR on a child, or yada, yada, yada. Like, yes. I mean, a million different things. I just had a knack for it. And most of the time, to be completely honest, I would come away from some of these like very, very intense calls. And most of the time I was like, well, we did our job, you know, and I feel okay. You know, we would talk about it within the crew sometimes if it was a particularly rough call. And sometimes if they're really bad, they force you to go to a critical incident stress management, group. So they bring in somebody and you sit around and talk. But, you know, there were a few of them, though. There's like a baker, like I said to a friend yesterday, there's a baker's dozen of calls that I ran that I was like, I walked away and I was like, oh, yeah, that's real bad. Like, yeah. This is something I will never be able to unsee. And
my daughter is like that.
Yeah.
But with animals. Mm,
yeah. No, I think it's just as valid, though, because animals feel they're living beings and they suffer the same as we do.
You know? I think that's excellent that you share that experience and share those kind of things with people. And I can't imagine anybody doing anything better than what you're doing to make it better for people who are experiencing PTSD.
Yeah.
Just like I said with my niece. But I have to just finish up with, I don't know how many TikToks I watched. I go down the rabbit hole when I get on something and and I laughed and I said, oh my God. And I said,
right.
I said a lot of things.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm glad nobody was in the room.
Right, right.
So, but it was a lot of fun because it gave me both sides of you.
Right.
And I think really those both sides are what makes you whole.
Ah, thanks. Yeah.
I mean, I hope that I'm not overstepping that kind of statement.
No,
but,
no. Yeah. I think that's totally reasonable.
And then you're a freaking DJ and you make people dance.
I try.
Well, I'm a Jersey girl and I dance.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, yeah.
If I could have danced, I couldn't really dance there. It was too crowded.
Right.
But I love to dance.
Yeah.
And
same.
Your music, like I was telling my husband, your music made me dance like back in the days of some of those bands I just mentioned, and I really enjoyed it. I know I'm not supposed to. Mike said, I think that's a midlife crisis or something. And I said, no, it's not. I'm always going to have a crazy side.
Right.
I was kind of a little wild.
Yeah.
And I'm always going to have that in me.
It's good. Yeah.
You know, like John Lee Hooker says, you know, an in me and it got to come out.
There you
know?
Go.
So
there
sometimes it's just got to come out.
Right.
But what do you play? What's a good playlist for you? I mean, you don't just stick to goth.
No. I mean, we have our goth night here in Athens that like our former bass player Dan Geller and I do with a bunch of other DJs. But and that's pretty pointedly goth. We stray a little bit. I mean, every goth night does. But I do another, you know, I've DJed a ton of different events with both Dan and on my own as well. And, you know, honestly, I just like anything that makes people move, you know, and part of being a good DJ is like not playing the music you necessarily exactly want to hear, but knowing, like having a working knowledge of what you do like that also moves other people.
That's one of my points when I think of a good pop song.
Yeah.
Is it going to make somebody dance?
Yeah.
And that's
absolutely
really like the first thing for me.
Yeah. Same. I mean, a lot of the music that we write, you know, there's although I sort of for brevity's sake refer to ourselves as like a goth or post-punk band, you know, it's just sort of like just for the sake of saying that because it's in that umbrella, but you know that we have a lot of like really catchy poppy sensibilities to what we do, and but I mean you look at a lot of the music that was from the 80s in that realm, you know, The Cure and Joy Division and all these bands, while they were very dark at times, they also had very catchy, dancey music. Like it was very danceable.
It's so weird because I listened to all of those bands, but do I remember everything about them now?
Right.
It was so long ago. It's not something you carry with you that, oh, I'm going to go listen to a Joy Division today.
Right.
But sometimes, I mean, I really don't go into the record room that much.
Mm-hmm.
But my husband and I go to vinyl night at Blue Sky.
Oh, nice. I used to work there. I used to bartend there, actually.
Yeah. Well, we really enjoy that bar.
It's great, yeah.
So, you know, I want to ask the final thing. Are there any dream collaborations that you'd like to pursue? Because right now, there are bands that are Athens famous, and then there are bands who are breaking out.
Mm-hmm.
And you're one of them. You tour Europe, you tour other places.
Yeah.
You broke out of Athens.
Right.
And not everybody wants to do that.
Right. Yeah, it's hard. I mean,
it's
a
hard.
Lot of work.
And it's a lot of work.
All the time.
It is.
Yeah.
So is there any collaborations with the goth punk scene or beyond? Some other type of collaboration that it's totally out of your realm of where you are now?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, well, one of the coolest things that we're about to go do is we're going to be touring the UK with my favorite band of all time, which is the Chameleons.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, I mean, it's still very surreal to me. Like we've played with them a couple times and we get along really well with those guys because they're just like, you know, they were working class dudes from Manchester.
Yeah.
You know, they were just kind of like lower middle class, working class kids in a factory town, you know, and so they're very real. And I like that because everything that I come from with the fire department or the army, you got to be real. And if you don't, people can die. I mean, it's that. So anyway, we're touring with them.
When does that start?
That starts in December. So we're doing the UK and Ireland with them.
Okay. What part do I take in that?
Yeah, seriously. come, you know, come on down. Like, I mean, honestly, the best thing, like I already know it's going to just be one of those shows that, you know, if I make it to a old age, I will look back and be like, Albert Hall, Manchester, because Albert Hall is like a huge place, you know, and that's a very well storied venue. I mean, I've never been there personally, but
I sat outside of it.
Yeah. So,
3-4 months ago.
Yeah. And I have so much respect for the Chameleons because they're kind of the unsung heroes of post-punk. Like they're a band that should have been 1,000 times bigger, but they're still out there right now and they're killing it and they're making really great music. A lot of bands that are in rotation making new stuff now from the 80s are kind of phoning it in. Yeah. And it's just like,
well, I meant to go listen to some of them because yeah. I knew that that was what
love
was happening.
It's so good.
So one, really, this is the last one.
Hmm?
What does Athens mean to you?
Oh, Athens is amazing. So when I, you know, I grew up around here and this place gave me the foundation of everything that I needed, to be who I am truly and intrinsically without fear. You know, it's a progressive, weird little town in a sea of otherwise oppressive and repressive and regressive, ideologies. And so I'm grateful that I had this place to be strange and be like a little weird goth kid. Yeah. And I was still allowed and accepted to do that. And to that point, you know, when I left the active army in 2016, I came back here because I was originally just going to be going back to grad school, but I, you know, then I ended up becoming a firefighter instead. But, you know, I think that Athens has this special energy that just it's essentially like a percolator of creative ideas, and especially in music. I mean, it's obvious when you look back at the 70s and you see the B-52s and Pylon and REM and all these other bands that just really changed music forever in a yeah. lot of ways, in a very important ways. And they all came from this one place. And there's a reason for that, you know, and it's
a beginnings. Yeah. It started with the Morton Theater
right.
and the black
exactly.
people coming
exactly.
into town.
Hot Corner.
Never having any other place yeah. to come to.
They
started making it special.
Yeah.
People came from all over.
Exactly. And it was a hub. And I think that now Athens has changed dramatically. And sometimes I look around and I can barely recognize it because I remember when I moved here, I dropped out of high school when I was 17 and I moved here and I got an apartment, 2-bedroom, 2-bath for $500 a month. Yeah. And now it's, you know.
Everything changed.
Yeah, everything changed.
Everything changed.
But within that though, Athens.
But Athens still.
It still has something incredible.
And people yeah. are coming here to feed yeah. off of the energy that was
yeah.
and is now.
I mean, look, case in point, like. I think this is the best example. This weekend we have, you know, our, like Dan and I are the creators of this Southern Gothic Festival. Last year it was just one night and it was the night of the Rumpus. So we have the Wild Rumpus, which is this, it's one of the world's largest
yeah,
Halloween events.
I had Timmy
events.
On.
Yeah, it's amazing.
A few weeks ago, yeah.
And it's, but we have expanded already to two nights at the 40 Watt. And we've pulled in all these bands from all over the country who've never played Athens before, to include the Chameleons and the March Violets and all these amazing, really great bands. And, you know, there are tons of towns that are this size that are all over this country that couldn't do what we're doing this weekend. And we don't have a huge goth scene here. But it's because people know that, you know, Athens is strange and there's like really cool, weird stuff happening all the time. And especially, you know, the beating heart of Athens
place.
Is the music.
It's
the
a
music.
Special place.
Yeah.
It is. I used to work in Nashville every month and I used to go see things that I said, oh, well, that's a Nashville moment.
Yeah.
And I say that much more here.
Mm-hmm.
That's an Athens moment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I know that we're going to get you to play something, I think. So let's do that. And I thank you so much for coming on this and finally talking to me so I could pick your brain and touch on a subject that I really didn't know much about. And now I feel so much better about knowing it and understanding it. It's like wrestling. I didn't
yeah.
understand shit about wrestling.
Yeah.
And except that I hated it.
Right.
And then I learned and,
yeah.
you know, I understood why people were drawn to it.
Right.
And that's what I like about the pop songs and about those kind of, I mean, after wrestling, I did skateboarding. So, I mean, and, you know, that same thing.
Right.
What is this culture?
Yeah, that's, yeah.
So I thank you. And now we get to say hello and hug and say, you know, how are you doing and all this stuff because we know each other now.
Absolutely.
And I really do appreciate it. So let's, what are you going to play?
So am I just like pulling a track from something or am I going to actually play something?
You're going to play.
Oh, okay. Well, without the band, I could probably play maybe In My Side would be easiest. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Yeah, your words are sharp, the way they cut under my skin. You know I wanna feel it again. And I've been lost in the dark, grabbing blades blind in the night. My betrayal's in the moonlight, and my body's bare in this murder scene. And it's so easy, reminding me that I feel your knife in my back. I can feel your knife in my side. I can feel your knife in my back. I can feel your knife in my side. In my side. Yeah, your darkness looms, your shadows are chasing my steps. And steadily I run out of breath. But these are darker days, I'm counting them to bide the time. With the whole that's reeling inside, and my body's bare in this murder scene. And it's so easy, reminding me that I feel your knife in my back. I can feel your knife in my side. I can feel your knife in my back. I can feel your knife in my side. In my side. My body's bare, this murder scene. And it's so easy, reminding me that I feel your knife in my back. I can feel your knife in my side. I can feel your knife in my back. I can feel your knife in my side. I can feel your knife in my back. I can feel your knife in my side.
My guest was so cool. I'm so happy that I got to talk to him. Dusty is truly an Athenian that, well, I want to say he's a horse of a different color, but it's a beautiful color. And his way of life and from everything that he's experienced and everything that he learned from as far as music and being in the military, being an EMT, you know, firefighter, all these things, you can't say that he hasn't experienced life in many, many facets. And it was just so interesting to speak with him. You can get a hold of Dusty or find out more about him on his website, visionvideoband.com. So, and also watch the TikToks. They're amazing. They are so much fun. Thank you all for listening, who are listening. And for those who are not listening out there, I always say, if you don't listen, you can't hear.